Hi, I'm Amber Harper, host of the Burned In Teacher Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the podcast you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Be sure to check out our other podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com and get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast, where each episode, Tanya Abrith and Holly Clark take you behind the scenes with leaders in education, give you insights into what's happening in classrooms around the globe, and showcase online platforms that are disrupting education.
Welcome to the Infused Classroom Podcast. We are so excited today to have on our show two inquiry gurus, Trevor McKinsey and Rebecca Bathurst-Hunt, and we are going to get to them in 1 minute. I'm Holly from San Diego, one of the co-authors of the Google Infused Classroom, and
I'm Tanya Averett, the other co-author from South Florida.
And let's begin with an introduction. Trevor, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Trevor McKinsey. Thanks, ladies, for having us here on your awesome podcast. I am a high school English teacher in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and I'm also an inquiry consultant. I travel the world supporting schools and districts and organizations in adopting more of an inquiry approach to their frameworks and their structures to empower their learners.
And I am Rebecca Bathurst-Hunt. I'm a kindergarten teacher also in Victoria, BC, Canada. And just like Trevor, really passionate about supporting educators in unpacking inquiry. And yeah, inquiry is kind of my baby. It's something I'm really excited and I'm happy to be here chatting with you today.
So one of the things we really want to know is, why do you think inquiry is so timely right now?
I think that our kids are so innately, they're born curious, and they have so many tools in today's world at their fingertips. Inquiry allows them to learn how to use those tools, to continue to be curious and to stay curious, which is something that I think we need to really have at our forefront. And so I think it's important and it's timely because of everything that's going on in our world, and it's forever changing. And we want kids who are curious, and we want kids who feel empowered to kind of follow their curiosity and their passions and ask big questions and know how to answer them.
Yeah, I think inquiry is really timely. I think schools around the world are moving away from an over-standardized curriculum and an over-standardized assessment and looking to embed more personalized pathways for their students, partly because of what Rebecca is referring to with regards to technology that our students have access to. And also partly just with regards to the workforce our kids are entering. Like, it's this very different employment landscape full of uncertainty. And the only skills we know our students really need for the world of tomorrow are, you know, to collaborate and communicate and create and be empathetic. And inquiry, more of a personalized approach in our classroom, allows us to hit down on those skills and nurture them with our students. So as Rebecca refers to, you know, they are feeling that curiosity across their educational journey with us in our classrooms and in our schools.
So I'm, you know, currently in the classroom as well. And I think a lot of people might not really understand what that means in the classroom. Like, how would you describe that to an educator that is not really familiar with inquiry, and how does that look like in their classroom?
That's a big question. You know, I think inquiry in my classroom in the high school setting, it looks different depending on when you were to come visit my class. You know, if we had the benefit of you coming to visit my school and watch me teach, it really depends on where we are in inquiry and what we're currently doing. But I'll tell you what it doesn't look like. It doesn't look like me at the front of the class lecturing for an hour. It doesn't look like the sage on the stage where I'm lecturing from slides or from notes. There may be a bit of that, but there's a lot more student-centered learning. So in my room, quite physically, if you can imagine, all of my desks are set up in pods of three, and my students are collaborating and working together often. And at times, maybe I'll speak at them for 10, 12 minutes, but then I turn it right back onto them, and their voice really drives a lot of what we explore, a lot of what we research, a lot of what we do. And so very rarely will you see me at the front of the room. You'll probably have a tough time actually seeing where I am in the classroom because I'm constantly moving, sitting next to students, getting into learning and getting into groups. And, you know, sometimes we're not even in the class. Sometimes we're in the community. Sometimes we're in other classrooms in the school. So it really depends on when you come and visit me. But what it definitely doesn't look like is me at the front of the class lecturing for an hour.
and looking at, like, it's very similar because I'm at a totally kind of other end of the spectrum than Trevor in kindergarten, but it's a lot of exploring time, and it's a lot of time that's taken to build relationships, to know what gets kids excited and what they're passionate about. And that takes a lot of time, I think, but it also is a lot of that exploring and asking big questions. And so for me, there is some explicit teaching in, like, what does it mean to ask a question? What different types of questions can we ask? And I do spend a lot of time kind of scaffolding that process. But then the exciting part is the diving into those, and what it looks like is exploring around the room, different areas for research, different provocations that we're experiencing, and tapping into curiosity and then beginning to ask questions.
So I'm very curious from a high school perspective. I have a lot of teachers that I'll work with who are very confused by the idea of hitting their standards or getting our students ready for college and standardized tests. And so, Trevor, what would you say to those teachers in terms of, like, how you deal with assessment and what that might look like in your classroom?
Yeah, you know, I hear a lot of that too in my travels, Tanya. And you know, inquiry isn't an either or. It's not, you know, I can't do inquiry because of my curriculum, or I can only do inquiry if I let go of the standards. And that's not the case at all. You know, in a lot of my work when I visit schools, we really do pick apart the standards and we pick apart the curriculum and we align it in inquiry structures. And what I mean by that is, you know, we really try to begin learning with student voice and big questions at the heart of what it is that we ask and what it is that we study. And we can align our standards with those big questions framing those units of study. And so we really need to know our curriculum quite well. We need to know our standards quite well. And then we need to align those with questions that both we ask as teachers, so we can model inquiry and kind of steer the ship, so to speak. But also we can align those standards and those learning objectives and our curriculum with student questions at the heart of how we're exploring that curriculum. And when students have a voice, a genuine voice in the classroom, and they can understand the standards and understand the learning objectives, I've always discovered that achievement goes up dramatically. So whatever our assessment tools are, you know, achievement's going to skyrocket because students feel empowered. They're exploring questions that are inherently relevant to them. They're curious, or they're interested, or they're passionate about those questions. So regardless of the assessment tool, if students have voice in learning, achievement will increase.
But I feel the same thing happens with kindergarten. Like, there's a lot of focus on reading. There's a lot of focus on early math. And so, Rebecca, how do you handle that same question?
Yeah, I think that the early years are crucial for, it's a balanced approach, right? So again, it's not just one or the other. They're definitely in, if you look at kind of the agenda on my board right now, there's definitely parts of my day that are explicit teaching around numeracy and literacy. And of course, I'm always looking for opportunities where I can weave in other parts of our learning into those as maybe like a theme. Or if we're right now, we're inquiring a lot about space. So if I can build my literacy lessons around anchor books and texts that are related to that, then that's awesome. But if not, that's okay too. And I think that what's important is that when you're in that shallow end, if you're looking at the types of inquiry swimming pool graphic, if you're in the shallow end of the pool, you as the teacher are leading that inquiry. And that's when you're hitting that content. That's when you're kind of meeting those must-knows, the standards, if you will, your curriculum. And as you progress, then you're still meeting them because the teacher is still kind of guiding in that shallow end of the pool. So I would say that it definitely is a balance, and we don't want to say no to literacy and numeracy. We don't want to say no to explicit teaching, modeling, and scaffolding. We can do both, and we can weave them in together, and that's that beautiful dance that we kind of do as educators.
Well, I have to say, I've seen some of the stuff that you do, Rebecca, and I always tell people and go back to when I saw you present, I was virtually in tears thinking of how great and how lucky the kids are in your classroom that you take them through this inquiry at this early age and how much they're getting out of it. So your examples are amazing, and I hope people get an opportunity, some chance to see some of the stuff that you're doing, read about it, follow you, the inquiry teacher on Instagram, and your name, Rebecca Bathurst Hunt. Is that right? Or is it R. Bathurst Hunt on Twitter?
Yeah, R. Bathurst Hunt.
So, Trevor, I'm going to throw this one to you because as an administrator, we want to do inquiry at our school, and often people don't know where to begin. So if someone's coming to you and asking, hey, we want to do this, what are the first steps? How do I get teachers in line? How do I get them thinking like this? What is your response?
Well, that's a big question, Holly. You know, I think we are talking about a culture of change and a culture of inquiry, if you will. And, you know, I believe in inquiry, all teachers can see themselves in this change. It's not like, you know, just for young teachers or just for the seasoned pros. All teachers can see themselves in this culture change. So I think from leadership down to teachers, they really need to understand, well, what is a culture of inquiry? What are we doing? What are the characteristics of the inquiry classroom? And what are we currently doing that's in line with those characteristics? And once they see themselves in this change, there's motivation, there's momentum, there's excitement behind this change. So I think we have to talk about a culture of change and a culture of inquiry and what specifically that looks like and why we're taking this change on. And then beyond that, you know, we really need to look at the role of questions in learning and as well as the role of the teacher in learning. And what I mean by that is, you know, I love seeing those really nuanced movements of the teacher getting away from that sage on the stage role and getting into learning and being more of the guide and facilitating learning. And we have to demystify what those moves look like. We have to demystify how a teacher pivots in the moment to empower students. And so really, in a lot of my work with Rebecca and visiting schools, we're trying to really shed light on those moves that teachers do in inquiry, in learning, so that we can all understand the power of the pivot and how we can pivot from a teacher-directed inquiry to a student voice-infused inquiry, if you will. So from leadership down, we got to talk about a culture of inquiry, we got to look at questions in learning, and then we got to talk about the shifting role of the teacher in learning and how we're, in turn, shifting the role of the student in learning.
So these are really great ideas, and I'm going to be the practical teacher here listening to this podcast right now, wondering, like, Trevor, what does your class look like on let's say this week, what would be kind of a typical day for you? What would that look like in the classroom?
This is, yeah, such a fantastic question. I feel like, you know, you are watching me on Twitter or something right now, knowing exactly what we're doing, because it's actually really perfect that you brought it up. We're exploring the UN Global Goals for Sustainable Development. This is a resource Rebecca and I created for schools that we're working with this year. For those of you listening that aren't familiar with the global goals, there are 17 of them that nations from around the world have committed themselves to contributing to. And in my class right now, I've challenged my students to choose one global goal that they're going to create a campaign or an action plan or a resource towards positively kind of contributing to that goal. And just today, they're turning their problem statement into an essential question. So they're taking this really specific challenge that they want to try to solve, and they're turning it into an essential question that in turn they're going to try to answer in the next 8 weeks. So today was
awesome.
We were looking at the question formulation technique. We are taking this problem statement that was full of really key words, powerful words that are different for every student in the classroom because they're all exploring different goals and different challenges that they're trying to solve. And then they're turning those into that big ungoogleable question. And so, you know, we'll share the link to that resource with this podcast so you guys can all see what we're doing with the global goals. And my kids are really into it. They're excited to do a campaign that's either affecting our local community here in our city or something a little bit more broad nationwide or something global and looking at a country, you know, somewhere that they haven't visited, but they want to contribute positively towards helping. So that's kind of what we're doing right now. That's what happened in my classroom today, in fact.
Wow, that's awesome. Rebecca, what about you? Like, what would that look like in the elementary, like early years? You know, what does that look like in your classroom now?
Yeah, we are in the midst of answering a question about what would it be like to have a mission into space. So our kids are kind of in the role of astronaut researchers, and they have chosen a place that they are passionate about and excited about in space, maybe not a place, but either an object or something in space that they wish to explore. So for the past few weeks, they've been researching about that. So looking at kind of what it would feel like to be there, what kind of equipment they would need, and different pieces about their chosen place in space. And now, based on all the knowledge that they've researched and found, they are using that to write little stories. So about their mission to space. So kind of, we started with our essential question, we dove into our research and a lot of really great provocations that were allowing them to construct their own knowledge. And now they're using all of their learned knowledge to write stories. And next week, We're building a museum for student-led conferences, so they will have kind of an exhibit that shows their learning. So today we had kids painting boxes to hang Saturn, and we've got kids paper mashing a big sun to kind of demonstrate the solar system, and lots of excitement there with their research and showing what they've learned.
And, you know, I'm listening to Rebecca, and I'm thinking of what I'm currently doing with my students. And, you know, throughout both of those big ideas, those essential questions, those inquiries, students are exploring literacy and numeracy in both of them. Like, it's, again, it's not an either or. It's not like you can't do math in inquiry, or you can't do, you know, science in a in an English classroom inquiry. It's how do we know our standards really, really well, and then align them in those student interests and those questions that they're exploring. And once we continue to kind of play with our standards per se and align them with those big questions and those interests at heart, you know, it's easy to see that literacy and numeracy is in everything that's happening in the inquiry classroom.
Yeah, and a little shout out to Kyle Pierce, who's doing Math Moments That Matter, which is math around inquiry. So it can be in every classroom. But I want to go back to the why. And I'm probably in this podcast going to say this a lot, and Tanya's going to be able to lip it as I start to say it. But we know, and I've been talking about this a bit, that next year in 2020, we're going to get 5G. 5G is going to be 600 times faster, which means our Wi-Fi that's connected in our homes is going to be 150 times faster. And that means that things like AI are going to get these flux capacitors, and they're going to get supercharged, and new things are going to happen. The next decade is going to see the most change we've ever seen in the history of the world. And when we're getting into that kind of new frontier, we'll call it, we can't continue to teach facts and some standards, quite frankly. And I see inquiry as the answer to that, because now we're having kids ask questions. We're having kids learn how to solve those problems. And while AI will be able to solve some problems, certainly, I don't know that AI is going to come up with the initial question. I think the initial question that we ask AI to solve is going to have to come from a human at first, possibly. And so that's why these questions and this inquiry to me is where we have to go. And I'm hoping that in the decade 2020 to 2030, that we'll have no choice. And everyone's going to have to start to look at their standards and ask themselves, how can we approach this by letting kids have competency in it and get that competency by asking questions and doing their own work? What do you think about that kind of why statement, Trevor?
Yeah, I love it. I think you're bang on. You know, it really resonates with me. I think, you know, so much of what we do in today's classroom, we weren't doing 5 years ago in the classroom. We weren't doing 10 years ago in the classroom. And that's a challenge for colleagues. That's a challenge for teachers to teach differently than they experienced as a student way back in the day, whenever that was. But it's also a challenge for our students. Like, the world around them is rapidly changing. The demands on them are rapidly changing. And, you know, universities are having to catch up. Like, every week I'm reading something online, an article or a report around how post-secondary institutions are doing something really innovative, whether it's machine learning, whether it's 3D printing in English classes at the post-secondary level, or looking at portfolios rather than an SAT as an admissions requirement. Like, the world is changing. How we're looking at learning is changing. I think, you know, the student's role in the classroom, again, it's drastically different than it was 5 years ago. And that's a head scratcher for teachers. Like, how do we meet the demands of tomorrow when tomorrow's over? It's changing by the time it's gotten here, right? So I think that the power of the pivot, I mentioned that earlier, you know, the power of a teacher to be responsive in the moment, to see where their students are at and where the world that we're living in is what it's giving us, and be responsive to that. I think Rebecca and I, we love breaking down inquiry myths. You know, we love going into a room of teachers or getting into a Twitter chat, having that awesome discourse and breaking down some of those, you know, myths around what inquiry is. And inquiry is not, you know, just free time for kids. It's not just the teacher sitting at their desk playing poker all class. It is really intentional and structured and well-framed and guiding the students through meaningful research that we know is authentic, that we know is either peer-reviewed or coming from a source that is valid, and teaching our students the difference between the two. And so we don't just trust computers, and we don't just trust artificial intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. So that they have this really empowered role in understanding the difference between the two and the difference in their learning, right? Like, we need them to do something different than they did 5 years ago. Therefore, we need to put them in different scenarios, different situations, different experiences, if you will.
So I want to say, you know this, David Price, an author that we both admire, says we have to change and shift our thinking from the way we should teach to the best way students learn. And I think that everything that you just described describes that. You're not sitting there at night thinking, okay, how am I going to teach to kids blank? You're thinking rather, how will students learn blank? And I think that's the distinction that has to change with teachers right now, is to get out of the mind shift of how am I going to teach something. And if we look at Rebecca, her kids are kindergartners. They're going to graduate in 2031, which means we're going to be done with that decade. And that decade is the same one that Kai-Fu Lee, and I've said this too, and probably other podcasts, is saying that it'll be the decade where it'll be the difference between having electricity and not having electricity is the dramatic change that we're going to see. I'm sure, Rebecca, you must feel like you're getting kids ready for that kind of critical thinking that they need.
Yeah, and I totally agree there. And I also think there's something to be said about this curiosity piece. So critical thinking, yeah. Huge. Being able to ask big questions, huge. But if our kids aren't curious and kind of eager to know what's going on and even aware that asking questions is an option, so even those are skills that I'm really trying to empower my learners with. Like, what does it mean to really like sit down and look at something and take the time to observe it and ask questions?
Well, and I just wrote something on curiosity, Rebecca. So I agree with you 100%. I think we have these four C's and curiosity is not one of them, which that should be like the foundational. Everything that we do in schools is to push forward the idea that kids need to be curious and they need to love learning. And honestly, if I had a kid go through the school system and they came out curious as heck and loved learning, I'd be like, win and win, instead of they can tell me when the Civil War was. They don't need to know that. So it's the mind shift.
Well, I want to just add this. Like, I'm currently teaching high school students, and what I've noticed happens, and maybe, you know, Trevor, you've seen this as well, but if they're not brought up in an education system where curiosity and inquiry is part of the backbone of the way that they've been learning, by the time they get into high school, we have literally schooled the love of learning and questioning out of them. And so it's really sad, and it breaks my heart, because by the time I get them like freshman year, they are just, they're playing the game, and they're like, okay, tell me what I need to do to get that A, you know, like, oh, I don't want to do this. This is so much work. Like there's almost this like feeling of like, I don't want to learn anymore. I need to play the system to get into college. And so, Trevor, like, have you ever encountered that in your time as a teacher in this capacity, like teaching in that way?
So much of what we have to plan for is to reconnect them to that innate curiosity that they lost somewhere along their educational pathway, their journey, if you will. So, you know, I think that's the norm, and I think that's part of our job as an inquiry teacher at the high school level, is to give them that voice back, show them that curiosity and questions matter, and that their curiosities can be explored in the curriculum. And that, you know, we feel their pain, we feel their angst, in that, you know, we're sorry that the curiosity has been stifled. And it's our job to reconnect them with that. And so when we put words to that tension and that sorrow, that pain, you know, students feel way more empowered, way more welcomed into inquiry, and way more willing to participate in this new role that we're asking them to take on. You know, if I were a teacher that were looking in the inquiry classroom, that would be a reason why I wouldn't want to take inquiry on, is, oh, students aren't curious. They're not passionate. They're not interested in anything. Well, we're to blame, quite frankly, and we have a role of responsibility, if you will, in bringing that back out of them. So I'd encourage those teachers to expect that that's the reality and reconnect those kids with those passions and those interests that they had when they were younger.
I also found, Trevor, when I tried this in my classroom the first time, I dove into the deep end, and that's another kind of analogy that you use, and we'll add that graphic into our podcast notes. But I was like, I'm going to do inquiry. So I'm like, okay, kids, let's talk about something you're passionate about. Let's find something. They're like, how am I going to get a grade? And I didn't scaffold. I didn't get questions first. I didn't do the things that you talk about so articulately in the book. And so that's what makes when you came out with Dive Into Inquiry and now Inquiry Mindset, it helps teachers see the steps that they need to do this effectively. And it also has the why. There's a lot of why in it. So I find that teachers who have read this really seem to be getting it. And I'd like it to be the Bible of education for 2030, or 2020. Do we have any last thoughts? If you were talking to a teacher and you could give like one piece of advice, each of you, what piece of advice would you give?
You know, my advice would be to dream big and start small. Like, you know, really do dream big for your students. And we've had a number of big ideas surface in this podcast. And, you know, we want to honor those big ideas and your big ideas, you listeners, those dreams you have for your practice and for your kids. You know, hold those near and dear to your heart, but take small steps to making those dreams a reality. And what I mean by small steps is little actions each and every day to build relationship, build trust, to get to know your students better. And slowly what we start to see is a culture shift that happens over weeks. It happens over months. And if every teacher in classrooms around the world are doing that, that's where we start to see a drastic shift in education. So, you know, dream big, but start small would be my advice. Rebecca, how about you?
Yeah, I love that. I would tap right back into the curiosity piece and challenge teachers to bring curiosity back. And whether it's starting small and maybe you do one part of your day where kids are kind of in that role of the researcher or a scientist, and they get to ask questions and interact with hands-on provocations or experiences. But finding ways to bring curiosity back for them, but also for us. So challenging them to kind of be in that role of modeling curiosity. That would be my biggest piece right now.
Well, guys, this has been such an awesome opportunity to pick your brains around inquiry. I think that you guys are doing such awesome work in this space and inspiring so many. I want you, if you're listening, to go on and you go into Amazon and look up Inquiry Mindset and look up Dive Into Inquiry. I have used them personally to get started in this space, and they are phenomenal resources. And definitely, I would definitely go out and follow our two amazing authors and guests today, because they are doing such wonderful things in their classrooms. Holly, do you want to add anything?
Trevor has a blog, trevormckinsey.com. Rebecca, do you have a blog?
Yeah, rebeccabathursthunt.com.
So there's lots of resources. I know that both Trevor and Rebecca are very prolific on Twitter and answer questions all the time. So if you just need to tweak something, ask a question, reach out to them, because I feel like this is our calling for the next decade. And so if we know who to reach out to and know who to talk to make our practice better, it's these two people. So remember them and ask lots of questions. Be curious.
Well, thank you so much for having us this afternoon.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Infused Classroom Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or anywhere you get podcasts. Keep up with the conversation by using the hashtag Infused Classroom on Twitter and Instagram. And make sure to check out infusedclassroom.com. See you next time.